This is the Starter Pack.
But you can't see what happened yesterday and not think, I know this guy's good. Now, how great can he be? Jordan Love is fully cemented in that position.
100%.
And now it's how high can he go?
Now, here are your hosts, Max Meyerson and Josh DiMaggio.
It is the Starter Pack back with you again after a brief one-week hiatus. Life got in the way. We had some things to do. Max had a birthday.
I did.
Birthday, Max.
Thank you, sir.
We got some holidays coming up, but we're coming back to you. We've got a lot to cover. A lot happened in the world of Green Bay Packers somehow over this past week. Usually a pretty dead week in Green Bay and in the NFL as a whole. We're going to get to Mark Murphy's comments. We're going to get to some MVP odds, some Packers win total. And we're even going to preview the draft with some draft props. But first, we're going to start off with something that came across my desk. I love that phrase, came across my desk. I don't even have a desk.
Is that how it happened? Yeah.
I share one with the great Greg Hill from WTMJ. But I like to imagine things just sliding from one end as I'm...
Hey, I got some for you.
Yeah, exactly. Like I'm reading a newspaper or something. But this is from the 33rd team. It's a question about the Packers and how teams should find quarterbacks. In the article, they ask, should teams follow the Packers template? Now, this went a little viral on Twitter because of these comments here from a random anonymous NFC executive. This executive said, it's really a hard decision because I look at what the Packers did, and that team was just so close to winning a Super Bowl. What I wonder is, had they taken an elite receiver and paired him across from Davante Adams, would they have won a Super Bowl? Maybe they do. He continues on. I wonder if there's a part of Brian Gutekunst that wonders, had he taken T. Higgins, and now he's a Super Bowl winning GM, does that change things? Or would I rather have Jordan Love right now? Would you give up Jordan Love to have a Super Bowl in 2020? Now, we can spend a little time on the T. Higgins portion of it. I think it's absolutely absurd to think T. Higgins would be the difference between a Super Bowl in 2020 or 2021 for the Green Bay Packers. I don't know if you disagree with that, Max.
No, I know where this is going. I just don't think that, like, obviously it would have helped.
Yeah, T. Higgins is great.
Yes, and, like, certainly that gives you a better chance. But that doesn't take away from the fact that they still could have won the Super Bowl that year. It's not like they weren't a great team that could have won the Super Bowl.
Right. Yeah, I don't know if T. Higgins moves, if the number two wide receiver in the team across from Davante Adams means Super Bowl or not. I think David Bakhtiari playing at left tackle when he got injured on New Year's Eve. I think that probably is the difference between a Super Bowl and not, if we want to try and cut fine hairs.
Sure.
But let's move on to the general idea here. This was a question they also put out from the 33rd team. We talked about in Jen Gabe and Chewy this morning. Would you rather have 10 years of Jordan Love or the one Super Bowl ring? So put yourself in a mode where T. Higgins or fill in the blank, the first round draft pick that they used on Jordan Love, becomes a player that is an instant impact and can help them win a Super Bowl. Where do you stand on 10 years of Love or one Super Bowl?
So this is an interesting question because, yes, when you get 10 years of Jordan Love, we're assuming we're going to have 10 years of perennial playoff team, constantly having a chance to win a Super Bowl, meaning that you probably could win one. But we saw with Aaron Rodgers for the last decade, it's not that easy.
Mm-hmm.
I would say give me the one Super Bowl over 10 years of Jordan Love because there's a grace period, all right? You win a Super Bowl, you get a grace period. You get
Aaron Rodgers knows all about it.
Yeah, you get about 5 to 7 years of a grace period. But then after about like 6, 8, 9, 10 years, you're like, all right, it's time to get another one.
Uh-huh.
So I would always take the guaranteed Super Bowl over 10 years of having a chance. Just think about what the Rams did in, what was it, 2021? Or 22 when they went all in. They got Matthew Stafford. They got Jalen Ramsey. They pushed all their chips into the front of the table and said, this is our chance to win the Super Bowl, and they got it done. And I don't think that they're regretting the fact that they don't have as many draft picks or that they trade all this stuff for Matthew Stafford or they had all this dead cap money.
Bleep them draft picks.
Yeah, bleep them draft picks. Exactly. So they don't regret it because they got that one Super Bowl. And if they don't win a Super Bowl for the next 5 years, so be it. They still got that one. And that's what matters most. So always give me the guaranteed Super Bowl. Not that drafting T. Higgins would have guaranteed you a Super Bowl, but if you're telling me right now, okay, have a Super Bowl or draft Jordan Love, give me the Super Bowl.
So this is extremely complex to me because I've long held the belief. It's the classic sports radio question.
Yeah.
Would you have one Super Bowl and 10 years of suck, or 10 years of pretty good and zero Super Bowls? You know, would you give up 10 years of being terrible, of being, you know, in the bottom of the NFL, drafting in the top five every single year, but you have that one Super Bowl guaranteed? Or would you rather go at it like the Packers have in recent history, where they were always in the mix, always competitive, most often always in the playoffs with a chance to make it? Some years were better than others. Sometimes it was they snuck in because they had Aaron Rodgers, and right, we all knew it was going to end quickly. What makes this interesting to me is because it kind of makes me want to go back against that theory, just because I know what Jordan Love is now in terms of a commodity and where the Packers stand right now. Now, if I were to pull a vacuum and the last year's draft doesn't go that well, but we're pretty sure Jordan Love's pretty good.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if I have the same stance. You know what I mean? Like, it's hard to vacuum just Jordan Love.
Yeah.
I think it would have been great for Aaron Rodgers to win a Super Bowl. Now in 2024, I'm probably happy he didn't, even though it would have been fun for that moment. Screw that guy. I don't want him to have nice things. Right.
No, I understand it, but here's the thing, right? Those last 10 years with Aaron Rodgers, where they would get to the playoffs and it was heartbreak after a heartbreak after a heartbreak after a heartbreak, you can't tell me that that's any better or worse than just being kind of a bad football team. Like, I understand, yes, okay, you got to dominate the Bears, you got to win your division all the time, you got to make good deep playoff runs, but that heartbreak at the end of the season hurt as bad as any team that stinks, all right? Any team that wins five games, six games every year, nothing, it's just as painful to be really good and come up short. In fact, I think it could be even more painful.
The other side of this argument that I want to, in support of the one Super Bowl, is this question is based on following the Packers template, which is drafting a quarterback, letting him sit behind a veteran, and then rolling them out 3-4 years after they were drafted. To me, at this point, the Packers' success at doing that isn't just coincidence or all luck. Luck certainly plays a part. For any quarterback to turn out to be good, there is some amount of luck involved. But for the Packers to have three franchise quarterbacks in a row, two of them done the exact same way, one with just probably one more year behind the starter, taking the Super Bowl and thinking the Packers can figure this out in the long term, I think is also a safe bet.
Sure.
Like, if I'm imagining Goody's still the GM, Matt LaFleur still the head coach, I have more faith than any other organization that the Packers are going to find a guy after Aaron Rodgers. And in this event where that draft pick works and is now just a vet on the team, I think they're in a pretty damn good spot regardless. So it's hard for me to try and piece that all together when you factor in all the nuance of the Green Bay Packers, because three times is a trend. It's that simple to me. There is something in Green Bay, and it's hard to figure out. Is it sitting behind somebody? Are they just better evaluators of the position than the rest? Because all these guys came from the same tree. It's Ron Wolf down. Now, Ted Thompson was sort of his own guy, but, you know, they've all worked together, and they're all familiar, and they're all sharing the scouts. They're all sharing the information. So to me, I would feel comfortable with the Packers not having what I know now.
Yeah.
With Jordan Love being a success, being one of the top odds at the MVP, which we'll talk about later in the show, to me, at this point, just give me the Super Bowl, and I believe in the Packers to figure it out.
Yeah.
And maybe that's arrogant of me.
No, it's not. I mean, they've proven it. And listen, like, their philosophy clearly works because, as Jason Wilde said a bunch of times, his first two training camps, he was terrible. And we saw him in his first game against Kansas City in, what was that, 2020? And it was bad. He wasn't ready. So they clearly have a philosophy of, okay, we're going to take a guy with tremendous physical gifts, which everybody, even back when he was getting drafted, acknowledged. Yep. Jordan Love had tremendous arm talent. He was a good athlete. He was a big dude. He could get it done. So it was just a matter of honing those skills and giving him the time to do that. And if you would have waited 3 years to make that pick, and it could have been somebody from this year, it could have been Will Levis last year, could have been any one of these physically talented quarterbacks, and just imposing that philosophy a couple years later when Aaron Rodgers is 40 years old as opposed to when he's 36, 37 years old. So, like, they could have still done the exact same thing and just waited, But they saw somebody's physical talent that they liked, and they jumped on the opportunity. And I don't blame them for it. But if you're telling me right now, okay, they could have Jordan Love or they could have a Super Bowl, why else would you want Jordan Love other than to get a Super Bowl? That's why you want a good quarterback.
The only hope you have is maybe you get multiple with Jordan Love in that 10-year period.
But listen, if I told you right now, okay, roll the dice. You don't know what's going to happen for the next 10 years with Jordan Love. Or I'm telling you right now he's going to get one Super Bowl and that's it. What are you taking?
You take the one Super Bowl.
Exactly.
Every time.
Yeah. So that's the whole point. It's like give me the guaranteed Super Bowl versus just a chance to get the Super Bowl because we know how much luck plays into it, injuries, all that stuff. You could have the best quarterback of his generation, Aaron Rodgers, for 10 years, constantly getting the NFC Championship games and never even get back to the Super Bowl, let alone win one.
There is one. You're listening to The Starter Pack with Josh and Max. There's one interesting layer here that Gabe brought up this morning on Jen and Gabe and Chewy, 7 to 9, ESPN Milwaukee, where he said, famously, and this is something that kind of has gotten lost since, the Packers wanted to draft Drew Lock in the first round,
yeah.
And they ended up not taking him, and then in the subsequent year taking Jordan Love.
Yep.
Now, Drew Lock has not turned out to be a good quarterback, but would Drew Lock have been better if he went to Green Bay and sat for a couple years? Because he was also a guy that people thought had pretty good physical tools. We even saw when he played, while most of it was bad, he made some throws that made you go, huh,
yeah.
It seems like there's something there. It seems like this guy isn't just a dud of a quarterback. He's not a complete miss. He's not a Mitch Trubisky who I think we all thought pretty quickly, like, eh, even though you have 4 or 5 touchdown games, we can see pretty clearly you're not that good. So would Drew Lock have been a similar situation? It just adds more and more layers to the case of there's something in Green Bay that certainly matters.
Yeah.
The healthiness of their quarterbacks, the bringing them and letting them sit behind other great quarterbacks, the fact that they just seem to be able to spot skills, and maybe it's the environment, too, that they're in. Mike McCarthy, people can say what they want about him. I think he's a pretty damn good head coach.
Yeah. He's really done.
Won a Super Bowl? And the thing we're talking about?
His track record with quarterbacks is undeniable.
Yeah, Dak Prescott playing his best football.
He almost won the MVP last year. So, yeah, to go to your point about Drew Lock, you're giving him a chance to sit behind Aaron Rodgers for 3 or 4 years could only be helpful. In fact, we saw last season just spending the time, even sitting behind a guy like Geno Smith, he came in, he had one of his best games,
yep.
and led them to a victory. Drew Lock has physical talents, and there's no doubt in my mind if they had put him behind Aaron Rodgers for 3 years, he would have been better than what we saw when he was in Denver being thrown into the fire. And not only that, but Jordan Love didn't look good to start this season.
Nope.
For the first 8, 9 games, he was not good. And they allowed him the chance to continue to grow. Even though he sat for 3, 4 years, he still was given the chance to go through the turbulence of the season and get better. A guy like Drew Lock, I feel like, was never even given a chance, and he wasn't even given that chance to sit. So I think Green Bay just understands the process better than a lot of these other teams who are desperate for a quarterback because they've never been desperate for a quarterback for the last 25 years.
Yeah, I can't say for sure the Packers are the best or they have it figured out where it's going to work every single time at this. But whatever they do there certainly enhances the chance of a quarterback being successful, and there's no way to doubt it.
No way to doubt it. Yeah, I mean, Jordan Love was raw. He was not ready, and they knew that, and that's why he didn't start. That's why they took him when they already had Aaron Rodgers, because they're like, listen, you're not going to start. We already know that. Half these teams draft a quarterback thinking, we got to start this guy, or we have nothing. You have the big advantage they have, the Green Bay Packers, is they have a quarterback worth starting ahead of them. A lot of teams don't have that.
Coming up next, we're going to talk a little bit more about Jordan Love, some MVP odds, and go over the Packers' win total for 2024. This is the Starter Pack. Max, can you name the 4 quarterbacks with better odds to win the 2024 NFL MVP?
This would have been a good question to ask before I looked at the graphic.
Sometimes you shoot from the hip, Max.
Yeah, well, I can tell you who they are now, but Is it even worth saying? Because it's, I just feel like cheating. All right.
Just read it off. All right.
Me. I'm sorry. I don't know. It was like a genuine question. I'm looking right at it. I don't know. It's Patrick Mahomes, which I think we all would have guessed.
Yeah.
Josh Allen, which I think we all would have guessed. Joe Burrow actually has the third best odds, which shocks me a little bit. Then Lamar Jackson at plus 1,000 is the fourth quarterback that is ahead of Jordan. That's it.
Followed are three quarterbacks that are tied.
Yes.
First one listed here, Jordan Love, Brock Purdy, and then Justin Herbert. They are all at plus 1,200. So looking at this,
hold on.
Yeah.
I'm so sick. Just name it the best quarterback in the NFL award. So stupid. We just have the seven best, eight best quarterbacks in the NFL listed. That's all it is. But anyway, go on.
Yeah, I mean, some people might have issue with the order they're in. They might think that some of these deserve to be placed a little bit higher. The Joe Burrow angle at plus 900, yeah, that's third best.
That's wild.
That is very interesting.
I try to think of it as a narrative award. He got hurt last year. They weren't good. Now he's back. They do really well. He's the difference, right?
Let me tell you, this is a big-time narrative award.
Big time.
Which I think that means Patrick Mahomes should be even better odds here, that if he has even a decent season, people are going to go crazy about it. But there's also a good story in Jordan Love.
Yes.
Because Jordan Love has replaced Aaron Rodgers, who I did look up out of spite, and just because me being me. He is about 12th on this list with his odds being a lot longer than this. But Jordan Love's plus 1,200, tied with three other people. And at this point, do we think it's too early for Jordan Love to be at plus 1,200? It gets me excited because I think Jordan Love has about as good of a chance as any of these guys. I think Jordan Love isn't going to have the sophomore slump that everybody's predicting. But is Vegas getting out a little ahead of themselves? Is this one of those – Vegas does this all the time.
Yeah.
They do it with flashy names, exciting names. They want people to bet action on because – plus 1,200 is a lot to lose. But if you think it's not that great of odds, you just put it out there and hope you can get some money on it. Where do you stand on Jordan Love as the fifth best option for him?
Listen, I love Jordan Love. I think he's fantastic. That is a wild number, to be fifth highest after his last season. Now, with that being said, I think he was probably higher up on the MVP list just last year than a guy like Justin Herbert, obviously, and maybe even, I mean, I know Brock Purdy was high up there, but let's be honest here.
We all know that was smoking.
That was all just, yeah, he's on a super team. Like, it's ridiculous. But yeah, I mean, would I bet on Jordan Love to win MVP at that good of odds? No, I would not. I just feel like that's asking a lot for the guy. For him, are they going to win their division this year? I mean, the Lions are still really dang good. I love Jordan Love. That is crazy to me already that he's that high. And that's just me being honest. Because he was great in the second half of the season. Absolutely fantastic. If he does that for an entire season, sure, he's the MVP. But at the end of the day, we still have to see it for an entire season, and we haven't. Guys on that list like C.J. Stroud and Justin Herbert, they were better than Jordan Love was in his fourth year as rookies.
Yeah.
And I can easily see those guys having monster seasons as well. It's just it does feel like a little bit reaching maybe a little too high with Jordan Love.
The thing that's interesting about these is some of these quarterbacks have, as you mentioned, a much better path to a division title.
Yeah.
I would say Josh Allen,
yep,
Brock Purdy, and C.J. Stroud probably all have easier paths. You could probably include Josh Allen in there to a degree.
Yep.
The AFC North obviously could be anyone's at any given point as they are constructed right now. What I don't like about this is the amount of things Jordan Love would have to do to get to that point and how flawless they would have to play. KBN, which you can hear 2 to 5 across ESPN Wisconsin, they had a discussion about, are you afraid of the Lions? I'm not afraid of the Lions. I think they're a good team.
Yeah.
But they don't strike fear in me the same way Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs do, or even Brock Purdy and the Niners.
Yeah.
In terms of teams I'm worried about, Lamar Jackson of the Ravens, in another case. But the Packers aren't even the favorite for the division at this point. So for things to go in Jordan Love's direction, I think he needs to blow expectations out of the water.
Yeah.
I think they need to be like a 13-win team. They need to win the division. And he needs to pretty pretty steadily put himself ahead of some of those bigger names, because this award, as you mentioned, is a quarterback award. And names carry a lot here. Patrick Mahomes, Josh Allen, Joe Burrow, Lamar Jackson. All names that people are going to recognize and want to put a vote on before Jordan Love. If you look at the end of season stats, Jordan Love was the second best quarterback, basically.
Yep.
If you divvy it all up, look at all the raw numbers, Jordan Love was up there, and he wasn't even getting sniffed. Now, he had a bad start to the season, but who's to say they don't have a rough half of the season, a rough quarter of the season that everyone pays attention to and downgrades him? I think he's still a little bit short of the true MVP talk. Like, I think he would have to have like 50 touchdowns.
Yeah,
I think Patrick Mahomes can get away with this, like a high 30s and like a high efficiency rate. You know, not a lot of interceptions, and his team wins a bunch of games. I think Jordan Love kind of has to like blow it out of the water in terms of the raw statistical numbers, in terms of passing yards, touchdowns, and probably even a little bit rushing, because guys like Josh Allen and Lamar Jackson, yep, Justin Herbert even, they get into the end zone with their feet, so that's another downgrade from Jordan Love, who I think is a competent runner.
Absolutely. But he doesn't look to run.
No, he's not looking to run.
When he does look to run, he doesn't look to go down either.
When the Bills get inside the five-yard line, they basically run the Cam Newton fullback dive with Josh Allen.
Yeah, he's ridiculous.
Yeah, he's giant.
He's insane. Like, I don't think we talk about it enough. He's literally Josh Allen. I mean, he's really Cam Newton physically, and he's way more talented as a passer. He's ridiculous. I totally agree with you, and I think part of the problem is the expectations for Jordan Love are extreme, like based on these odds alone,
yeah,
are extremely high. So I think people are saying, okay, this guy is going to throw for 4,500 yards, he's going to throw for 35 touchdowns. Anything short of that is a disappointment, which is why I agree with you. I think he's going to have to throw 40 touchdowns and 5,000 yards to even be in the conversation. And yeah, they're going to have to win 12, 13 games to try and win that division, because say what you want about the Lions, about like how they strike fear in you in the playoffs or whatever in a one-game situation. Over the course of a season, they're more talented than a lot of teams. I think outside the quarterback position, they're as talented as any team in the NFL. They're like the Niners level in terms of talent outside of the quarterback position. Now, with that being said, do I still think the Packers can win that division? Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
But it's just a matter of everything having to go right, and that's a tough thing to bet on with those kind of odds.
You are listening to the Starter Pack with Josh and Max. Let's stick with the odds here and talk about the win total for the Green Bay Packers. We just mentioned the expectations that Jordan Love would have to reach in the win column in 2024. This is also from DraftKings. There's a list of teams with their win totals. Three teams with 11.5 wins, that being the Niners, the Ravens, and the Kansas City Chiefs. And then there's a whole mess of teams, to name a few: Lions, Packers, Eagles, Bills, Bengals, Dolphins, Falcons, Cowboys, all at 10.5. The interesting thing here is the Packers are listed first on this because I think the Packers just move the needle.
Yeah.
But the odds are plus 130. So that means they're more or less likely to have 10.5. You're getting a little extra juice on it because they try and make these numbers not whole numbers. So if you bet 10 and they win 10, it's not just a push.
Sure,
they're trying to get a result on either end here. So that's why it's 10.5. Where do you stand, and if we can pull up the Packers' opponents, we don't know the order in which they will play them, but where do you stand on the Packers at 10.5 wins?
That is now you're getting plus money, right? So automatically you're like, okay, well, if they just get to 11 wins, but just saying that, get to 11 wins, like it's just this easy thing. I just always worry with a team like the Packers that's really reliant on their quarterback and everything like that. I don't want to be I just feel like I'm Mr. Negative today, but I would probably still bet on the under. I just don't feel like it's to put in perspective, the Niners have the highest chance to win 11, or they're 11.5. That's the highest over under. Now they're getting, you know, plus money for that as well. The Ravens actually have the Chiefs have the worst odds in terms of they're going to have the most wins based on the odds. But with that being said, it's still just one more game than the Packers, and I just feel like that's, again, our expectations are so high for the Packers right now. I feel like they're going to have a little bit of a come-back-to-earth moment because we're all just so focused on the second half of the season. We forget that they lost to Tommy DeVito. Mm-hmm. Right? We forget some of the stinkers they had at the end of the season because, oh, they destroyed the Cowboys in the wild card and they had the Niners on the ropes in the divisional round. With that being said, they still have shown that they are a young team. They're still learning how to do it. And I just feel like that's too big of a number for me.
So I think I feel pretty comfortable betting it. I pulled up here the 2024 opponents. Obviously, we've got home and away for the division. We know those guys.
Sure.
We're not super concerned at this point about the Bears or Vikings. Who knows what Caleb Williams ends up being, who seems to be the inevitable number one pick. That could become more of a challenge, but until I see it from the Bears, I'm not going to bet on it.
Sure enough, fair.
Long enough history.
Fair.
The Vikings are full-fledged rebuild.
Yeah, they're dead.
Who knows?
J.J. McCarthy's going to be their quarterback, and they're going to stink. Go on.
So let's go through the home opponents first. We've got the Arizona Cardinals. I think that's an extremely winnable game.
Sure.
We've got the Houston Texans. Challenging game, not unwinnable. That one's probably closer to coin flip, if I were to determine it.
Sure.
Indianapolis Colts, I think, is an extremely winnable game. We've got the Miami Dolphins, which who knows which version of the Dolphins show up. Is it the good team that can score 70 points or the team that can't beat anyone good? Then we got the New Orleans Saints. I feel like that's a fairly winnable game as well. And then the San Francisco 49ers. We move over to the away games. We got the Jacksonville Jaguars, should be able to win that game. Los Angeles Rams, who knows what version of the Rams we get, but historically they've been a pretty beatable team in recent history. Philadelphia Eagles, challenging one.
Yep.
The Eagles are probably more likely to win that one than not. Then we finish it out with the Seahawks and the Titans, both extremely winnable games.
Yes.
I think the Packers are benefiting here basically from the schedule, that the way they finished. They weren't the best team in their division because if you're the division winner, you usually play the other opponent's division winner.
Yep.
So the Packers aren't getting the cream of the crop here.
Nope.
This is a schedule that bears out in their favor. It's not a super challenging schedule. I don't know where the schedule rank is because they do factor in a lot of things there. But to me, the Packers should have no problem getting to 10 wins. Now, you need that half. But the Packers lost a lot of close games last season, and we saw as bad a quarterback play as we've ever seen as Packer fans since Brett Favre showed up here.
Sure.
There was the Scott Tolzien and those years where Aaron Rodgers wasn't playing. But other than that, Jordan Love didn't look great, looked like a total different person. I think the Packers can come back to earth from that second half of the season and still get to 11 wins. Now, you need some things to go your way. You need to play well. You need Jordan Love to be the best. But I would feel more comfortable with this bet, obviously, because the odds are better in your favor.
Yes.
Than I would about Jordan Love, though.
Yes.
And MVP. This just seems, if I find it very easy to tell the story to myself where the Packers might not even win the division, but are still like 11, 12 winning
sure.
team. Just because the Lions could go on a great run. Say they split with the Packers, the Packers clean up the rest of the division, and then you're just looking for 6-7 more games on that schedule. I think that's doable.
So let me ask you this. So you say you feel better about betting on this than you do on Jordan Love. So they would have to get to 11 wins for you to win.
Uh-huh.
Let's say they win 12 games. At that point, you're assuming Jordan Love played unbelievable football.
Yeah.
At 12 wins, that's the exact number Detroit had winning the division last year, so I think you can assume that they at least have a good chance of winning the division at that point. At that point, wouldn't Jordan Love be in that MVP conversation?
I think he'd be in the conversation, but I think there's a really good chance the Lions still win the division if the Packers have 12 wins.
Fair enough. I mean, like, yeah, I get it.
That's where I stand on that.
But that is a tall task to win 12 games, and to do that, you're going to need Jordan Love to be the MVP, essentially, in my opinion. Because they still have a bunch of young guys on offense. Yes, they're all super talented. Yes, we're very excited about that core. The defense still unproven. We still don't know what Jeff Hafley is going to be like as a defensive coordinator. Sure, all those things can play out great. But at the end of the day, if you're going to win 12, 11 games, Jordan Love is going to have to be as good as he was in the second half of the season. And if at that point, he might as well be the MVP, which is why I'm like, okay, let me just kind of average out what he was for all of last season. And that was a 9-win team and a guy who was really good but not insane MVP level. So I think I feel safer with them being a 10-7 team.
Yeah, I mean, to compare it to last year, we're looking for two more wins.
Yes.
We're looking for two more wins. We hope Jeff Hafley is more competent. Say the defense is just somewhat better.
Yeah.
Can stop the run.
Sure. No, yeah.
Say there's a game. Say they give up no 200-yard rushing games.
Yes.
Say Jordan Love plays at near the same level to the second half of the season, but not all the way. You have improvement from – you have a more comfortable coaching staff with a more confident plan on what they're doing. They know the roles of the guys on the offense. And I just think those guys make a difference. I think Jordan Love – right now, as I sit here, even though I'm not picking Jordan Love to win the MVP, I think he's going to be one of the three or four names that are in it.
Sure.
I just believe in Matt LaFleur and his offensive design.
Well, then at that point, you should bet on him because his odds are the fifth best.
Well, I'm getting one person of value here.
Yeah. That's value.
It's not that great of
value. It's EV.
No, because I think narrative matters a lot more than is given credit to that. Where I think basically people have to take this away from Patrick Mahomes to go back to the MVP. Yeah. The narrative got too crazy. He didn't have a good team. He pulled them to another Super Bowl. That's how I view it. And what if Josh Allen? Believe me, these voters want to vote for Josh Allen.
Yeah, he's going to win one eventually. Like, it's just going to happen.
Yeah, they're ready to burst the bubble on Josh Allen.
Just don't have a three-interception game against the Jets in December for no reason at all.
Exactly. That's where I stand at it. Yeah. I think they're going to look at Jordan Love, who will, you know, could have comparable stats and just be like, it's not your turn, young man.
Yeah.
That's kind of the way I view it, because I think narrative has to play a large factor in here. And just looking at this schedule isn't – I'm not – like – if between the – I wouldn't be shocked if the Packers could win two of the Niners, Dolphins, and Eagles game. Now, I wouldn't bet on it as we're talking about betting now, but that wouldn't shock me. We didn't think the Packers would have any chance in the final run they went on.
The thing with the Packers is just it's so weird, right? They beat Patrick Mahomes, but they lost to Tommy DeVito, Baker Mayfield, and Kenny Pickett. So, like, you can always say, okay, yeah, I think they can take out one of the teams, but then you're assuming that they're going to beat the teams they should beat, which never happens. There's always going to be one or two, maybe even three games in a season where you feel like you were the better team, but you lost.
Yeah, that's football.
That's football. That's what I'm saying, dude. Like, it's one thing to just be like, all right, yeah, easy, give me two more wins, we're good. It's not as easy as that.
I mean, at this point, if the defense doesn't improve enough to get them an extra win or two, they got some major problems up there in Green Bay.
Yeah, I agree.
All right, talking about major issues up in Green Bay, Mark Murphy had some comments. Maybe some comments that were edited. We'll talk about it next on the Starter Pack. We don't have a lot of rules here on the Starter Pack, but I'm going to instate one right now.
Have we ever had a rule?
No. This is our first
rule. All right.
When Mark Murphy speaks, we listen.
All right.
It's that easy.
Respect it.
We've only got a little time left with old Mark Murphy before he is forced into retirement as the CEO, say, of the Green Bay Packers, of the team president. But earlier this week at the NFL owners' meetings, Mark Murphy got in front of a microphone. He called Jordan Love pretty damn good with a big hearty hard laugh. And then there was a strange question. This was an issue I didn't know even existed, but let's let Mark Murphy tell it from his side of the story first.
Yeah, it was disappointing. I got a call from the mayor that he was going to cease negotiations. We're going to stay in Green Bay. We're going to work things out. But, I guess I'd say that for us, the keys are, we've invested a lot of money in the stadium. We're not asking for any public money. I think going forward, we're willing to put in, and this is, out to 2030 or 2040, we're willing to put in $1.5 billion into the stadium. We've already put over $600 million of our own money into the stadium. But given the fact that they've walked away, we're going to go forward with $80 million in improvements to the stadium, mostly in the concourse and the concession areas. That given the status of negotiations, we're going to halt those investments. So that's going to affect our fans and also affect us. It's a very dangerous play, I think.
So I love that portion in there where it just skips to that's a very dangerous play on purpose. That is purposeful, because if you look on Twitter and you see some of the Green Bay beat reporters that were there, the full clip includes it's going to affect the fans and it's going to affect the NFL draft. The NFL draft that is scheduled to be in Green Bay next year. 2025,
so,
is that
yes.
right?
Yeah,
I'm having a hard time switching the year over and moving my mind forward.
Yes,
so,
it's 2024.
The Packers are going to have the draft. Now, I kept it in there because the Green Bay Packers want you to believe that it was a technical issue. I have a hard time believing that, because the only thing Mark Murphy said worth being cut out was what he said there at the end with the draft. There's a lot to pull apart here. There's a lot that I have to say. I want you, who I think that's the first time you've heard this audio.
Yes, it
just
is.
Give me your immediate reaction to what Mark Murphy's saying there.
Yeah, that is a disaster class in how to handle a media session. I mean, the fact that they edited out the part about the draft is shocking. I mean, clearly that's something that he probably should have kept to himself, or something that was said out of pocket. At the end of the day, like, I don't know, man. Like, you just can't – you got to be able to be more calculated in what you're saying in front of the media. And to have something like that slip out, and then to double down on how bad it is, to edit it out, not just take it on the chin. Like, that's – you said what you said.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's going to get out there anyway. Like you said, there's beat reporters there. It's not like nobody heard it. So, to me, it's just a – it's sort of a just – it just shows how kind of out of touch – not out of touch, I would say. But
oh,
just,
I think out of touch is
I
fair.
Think extremely out of touch, because – You can't just control the narrative when you say something like that. You can't say, "Oh, let's just take it out and nobody's gonna pretend nobody heard it." Like, that's just like how that's very out of touch. So that's just all I took away from it. It's a very out of touch, old school organizational move, I feel.
So on Twitter, the Green Bay mayor responded to these comments. Now, the reason this is an issue is the Green Bay Packers have tried to negotiate their lease. The Packers lease the Lambeau Field from the city of Green Bay. The city of Green Bay and their constituents, the people who live there, rely on the tax money gained from the Green Bay Packers paying their rent. Their rent is a minuscule portion of how much the Green Bay Packers make every year, how much the Green Bay Packers have in their little slush fund that they keep around for improvements on the stadium. I do want to read a little bit from him. From the mayor of Green Bay, Eric Genrich. I don't know his name. Sorry, Eric. I apologize if you're listening.
Mayor Eric.
The city met in good faith with the Packers over the course of several months to discuss reopening the lease terms based on the team's request. Although they were productive conversations and the Packers expressed openness to the city's proposed terms, the written proposal did not reflect those discussions. The Common Council and I are united in our assessment of the terms offered by the Packers, and if the team wants a different answer, they need to bring forward a proposal that's worthy of our consideration and in keeping with what was expressed during our conversations. Basically, to sum this all up, the Packers want cheaper rent.
Yeah.
They have, I believe it's 9 years remaining on their lease, and then they have 2 5-year options that are tacked on to the end of that. The Packers who pay, I believe the amount for rent is like $1 million, $1.1 million a year. I don't have the specific terms in front of me. It's not all that important, because unless it was $50 million a month, I don't think any of us would say, well, that's a lot, and the Packers probably shouldn't have to pay that
much.
What's going on here is Mark Murphy got in front of the media at the NFL owners' meetings and clearly wanted this question asked. He wanted to make this issue public, and he wanted to turn fans on the city of Green Bay in favor of the Packers. What he didn't expect is for all of us to look around and go, wait, why are you trying to get cheaper rent? What about this? Why would the Packers deserve to pay cheaper rent? Because you're upgrading your own house? Because if I go to my apartment and I update the faucet, let's say, I can't look at my landlord and be like, hey, can you shave off $50 of rent because I replaced us? And they'll be like, no, that's not how this worked. That was your choice. Well, I painted the walls and made this room look really nice.
Right.
I don't care. You did it on your own. Nobody asked you to do it. That is what you're doing to ensure you make the most monies and your fans have the best experience. the threat to the fans and the $80 million being halted for the upgrades in the concession stands and in the concourses, I think is so unfair for a team that puts on a pedestal the fact that they're community owned. There's no ownership. They are, you know, they are different than everyone else in the NFL. Well, then why don't they act like it?
Yeah.
Why don't you take that to heart and say, hey, me, the Green Bay Packers and the city of Green Bay are in a symbiotic relationship. We need each other to function. The Green Bay Packers almost failed as an organization back in the day, and the city of Green Bay has helped, the city of Milwaukee's helped, and the citizens of Wisconsin have helped, because every time they put out their little fake little stock owner sheet, yeah, people buy them and they sell out and they fill their coffers and they make all these improvements without having to take any of their own money. In there, Mark Murphy said, we put $600 million of our own money into this.
Whose money?
Whose money is that?
Yeah.
Is that the money that the fans got? Is that the money that you got for being in the NFL and the TV contracts? It's not like the Packers are doing some other side business here.
Yeah.
It's the people of Green Bay who you swear to be community owned. The Green Bay Packers have no problem raising their prices and they'll say, well, it's cheaper than everywhere else. Yeah, because you're in the smallest market.
Yeah.
And it should be cheaper than everywhere else because your fans give money for you guys to exist for nothing.
Right.
So they could put a nice little sign up on the wall saying, I'm a Packers owner.
Yeah, right.
I can't believe that there would be anybody who would look at the Green Bay Packers and Mark Murphy and say, I side with them. You guys should pay less rent. When all of us out there looking for houses, looking for apartments are going, damn, it's expensive out
yeah,
here.
But newsflash, my rent's gone up every year I've been here.
So the Green Bay Packers are saying, you know what? We built this nice little title town. We don't really do much year-round. We have a few concerts, maybe a college football game. But you know what? We don't want to pay this much. For what? Do your part. Play yeah. your rent. Be a part of the community. That's what this deal is. This is who the Packers are supposed to be. Now, I know you didn't grow up a Packers fan, but when you hear something like this and you hear how the Green Bay Packers are different than everyone else,
sure.
What is your reaction to that when you see Mark Murphy behave this way?
Yeah, they're not different than anybody else. Let me tell you something as a fan of another team. This is how it goes every single time between the owner of an organization, a.k.a. Mark Murphy in this situation, and the city in which the stadium is built. It's just a back-and-forth bloodbath negotiation publicly about who's going to pay for what and how it's going to be paid for. He can say all he wants is that we paid for the $600 million in upgrades or whatever. At the end of the day, like you said, you're supposed to be a different organization than everybody else. That's supposed to be the people's money. That's supposed to be all the people of the city of Green Bay who own and entrust the Packers to you to improve the stadium. And you're going to sit there and say, oh, it's our money that we paid for that, and we're the ones doing it. You're just an owner. You're just Mark Murphy. You're the owner of the Green Bay Packers, and that's it. You're not any different than any other owner or any other city or any other organization, and don't claim to be next time you try and, like you said, sell your little, you know, fake I own the Packers certificates and all that stuff, because you're not any different. This is exactly how it goes with every other team in every other city. That's just the way it is. It's always a negotiation publicly between the mayor, the city, and the organization.
It's hard for me, you're listening to the Starter Pack with Josh DiMaggio and Max Meyerson. It's hard for me because I love the Green Bay Packers that are on the field.
Yes.
The front office that has taken over since Mark Murphy, I could care less about. Sure, you can say he's the reason that the Packers have expanded, the reason Titletown's so nice, the upgrades of the stadium, whatever. I could make upgrades to a stadium.
Sure.
I could add some businesses out in the parking lot. Yeah, that seems like a pretty smart idea.
Yeah.
I don't think it took a genius with a stroke of genius to do that. I could do the stock sale and say, hey, we're the Green Bay Packers. Do you want to invest in us? The fact that the Green Bay Packers want to have it both ways. They want to be the community owned. They want to be different than everyone else. They want to make $500 million a year because guess what? We can look at your taxes.
Yeah.
We do every year. And guess what? You guys report records every single time we take a look. Every time you guys get a chance, you're making more money than you could shake a stick at. I believe the last numbers were like 500-ish, 600-ish million dollars in a single season of just profit. Now, you can fudge those numbers. You can try and move them around. You can try and get cute with them. But we know what's going on. The team's worth $4 billion.
Yeah.
There is no owner, but Mark Murphy is the de facto owner.
Yes.
The owner's supposed to be the fans. And I think it would behoove the Green Bay Packers and go a long way and make people like me be less likely to say, oh, that stupid piece of paper that they sell, if you guys gave benefits to those people.
Yeah.
If you acted like, hey, we're happy to pay our rent because our money matters to the city that we call home. And the fact that we are in the middle of this neighborhood.
Yeah.
We are this idyllic place like no one else has. But you guys are going to basically show up and be the big bullies. Say, we're the Green Bay Packers. It's our way or the highway. That's not how this should work. That's how That's how Jerry Jones and the Dallas Cowboy work. That's how all the other big owners, the Robert Krafts, the guys who shake big sticks, that's not supposed to be Green Bay. If you want Green Bay to be that way, then figure it out another way. And don't sell this stuff to me about us being different than everyone else. We don't have an owner. No, you guys don't get it both ways. The fact that they want it both ways is the part that makes me drive. If this was Jerry Jones and this was happening in Dallas and I was a Dallas Cowboys fan, I'd be like, yeah, whatever. This is what owners do. But the Packers aren't supposed to be the Cowboys. And if you look at this any other way, I find it hard to believe. The Packers are just trying to be Jerry Jones and the Cowboys.
Yeah.
They're trying to be the big bad owners, and they're not supposed to be those guys.
Yeah, and I know nobody cares about the Cleveland Browns, but I'm a Cleveland Browns fan. They're literally going through this exact same situation right now. They are talking about building a new stadium outside of the city of Cleveland because the city of Cleveland doesn't want to pay for renovations to the new stadium.
Which, as quick aside there, hey, owners, pay for your own
debt. Yeah, exactly. Right. It's the same situation. It's like, dude, you're a freaking billionaire. Like, how much money do you need? Like, why does the city have to pay for it? It makes no sense. So, yeah, like, this is just like you're saying. It is literally the same situation with every owner of every NFL team and every city. And the Packers are no different.
I wish they were different because they want to tell us they're different, but they just simply aren't.
They aren't.
Max, there's a draft coming up.
Real football?
Yeah.
We're not talking about leases and negotiations?
No, but screw Mark Murphy in the front office.
Yeah, yeah.
Coming up next, we're going to do a little fun. We're going to get back into the gambling realm a little different way, though. We are going to talk about the upcoming 2024 NFL Draft and go over some of the props. This is the Starter Pack. We are only 27 days away from one of my favorite events of the year. You can stack up the NFL Draft with the Masters, with the Super Bowl, with the first couple days of March Madness. The NFL Draft is something I look forward to every year. The NFL Draft is something I spend probably the entire first portion of the year on. After the Super Bowl, it's draft time for me.
Yep.
I think you're the same, Max.
100%. I love the draft every year. I do my mock drafts going into it. I do the game. I don't know if you've ever done the mock draft.
Oh, yeah. Simulators?
Network. Yeah. Well, if you've done the one on NFL Network where you get like points.
No.
Okay. You got to do this next time. So, like, on NFL, if you go to NFL.com, they have, like, a mock draft game.
Yeah.
Where, like, you put in your mock draft, and if you get, like, the right player, you get 100 points.
Oh, okay.
If you're, like, two picks off, you get a certain amount. So, it's a point system for, like, how correct your mock draft is, and I do it with my friends, and we bet on it, and it's a great time.
I want in on that.
You
this
have to
year.
Do it.
I think
it's so fun.
To give ourselves a little future plan, we are going to dive deeper into the draft and deeper into the draft from the Packers' angles.
Yeah.
I'm probably going to have you, Max, work on some guys just to give me an idea of them, some guys we've been rumored. The Packers, you give a scouting report. I'll have my own.
Sure.
We can react to them from there. But we're going to start off with kind of a general synopsis of the draft. This is just a kind of a 10,000-foot view in a way. We're going to go over the top six picks because we know the first pick. So I want the next five picks, 2 through 6. And then we're going to talk about some of the guys drafted. I think we should do a segment here coming up. Maybe we do it right before the draft. The weekend before, we will do a mock draft that
yes.
we each do.
Let's do
and
it.
We'll just kind of run it through, do it all that way. So that's our plans for the future. But today, we're going to discuss the odds of the NFL draft. So here in front of me from the DraftKings Sportbook, I have a whole bunch of options. The first one we're going to talk about is the number 2 overall draft pick. That one goes to the Washington Commanders. We have some options here at who we think will be the second quarterback taken. Now, this one got interesting just yesterday.
Yes, it did.
Because Jaden Daniels coach Brian Kelly
yes.
said when Jaden Daniels gets drafted to Washington, So that kind of made me go, well, it seems like they have a pretty good idea who they're going to take at number two, because everyone assumes Caleb Williams to the Bears is number one. And the Bears haven't really even tried to hide that at this point.
No.
Because it doesn't matter. So Jaden Daniels is the first option at minus 145. We have Drake May at plus 165, J.J. McCarthy plus 430, or Marvin Harrison Jr. at plus 7,500. Do you think that was just Brian Kelly misspeaking, or do you think they pretty much know Jaden Daniels is the number two overall pick?
I think there's a lot of smoke to this at this point. Not only that, just the sort of like negativity that's coming out about Drake May. It feels like he's the one QB falling here. I feel like everybody's fallen in love with Jaden Daniels. He's the Heisman winner. He had a fantastic season. And Brian Kelly, of course, he's going to hype up his guys, but he's not afraid to be honest.
Yeah.
Like, he's not afraid to say, I don't know.
Except for when he gets a fake Southern drawl his first time in the LCU.
Well, yeah, no. I'm not saying he's not a snake oil salesman. But I am saying when it comes to draft, he has been known to be honest about his quarterbacks. I think back to DeShone Kizer. He was like, this dude is not ready.
Yeah.
And he got drafted, and he was terrible. So, yeah, I do believe that Brian Kelly probably has some inside information. And, I mean, the odds reflect that. He's minus 145 for a reason. I don't see any reason he's not going to be the quarterback of the Washington Commanders.
This one I honestly wouldn't bet on. But if you were to, I would just bet Drake May and hope maybe you get a little plus odds. It's not that great of odds, but there's a chance he just misspoke, or there's a chance they're kind of feeding him some BS. That happens around.
Certainly could
that be. That happens around draft season. We are 27 days away, and we are smack dab in the middle of BS season.
I will keep you in mind that Will Levis was like minus 6,000 to go to the Colts at 4 overall or 3 overall, whatever it was last year, and he didn't go to the second round. So, I mean, you never know with this stuff, but I do still, at this point right now, I think Jaden Daniels goes number two.
Moving on to the number three pick, we have the Patriots. They are quarterback needy. This one is Drake May minus 115, Jaden Daniels plus 160, J.J. McCarthy plus 500, Marvin Harrison Jr. plus 900, and Malik Nabers plus 6,500. This one feels like Drake May. I would be more ready to bet on Drake May or J.J. McCarthy than I would Jaden Daniels, just because I think he's pretty safe to go at number two.
Totally agree with you. I have a weird feeling about J.J. McCarthy. I don't know if the Patriots do it. I don't know if the Minnesota Vikings make the motherlode offer to number three. I think J.J. McCarthy becomes the third QB off the board, and I would bet him in this spot, even though I would probably take Drake May. I just think that's a lot. That's good plus money. Drake May, would I be shocked if he goes right here? No. But I just have this weird gut feeling about J.J. McCarthy.
The thing J.J. McCarthy has that is working in his favor is every time it gets closer to the draft, it's either – there's two ways it goes. There's always a quarterback that kind of comes up and everyone goes, what the hell is this guy doing here?
Yeah.
And it's either a guy who's just extremely athletic and can do all sorts of things, but you really can't define any of them. Or it's a guy like J.J. McCarthy that just functions in a system. Because there are certain NFL teams who – rightly so, I think, to some degree, see a guy who knows how to work a system, which J.J. McCarthy did very well. He didn't attempt a whole lot of passes in college. So I think that is working in his favor. I think we probably are going to get four quarterbacks right off the board in a row. I am interested to see what happens with this next pick, which goes the Cardinals at four overall, because they've made it pretty clear they want Marvin Harrison Jr. They have kind of not really been shy about that. So where do they have to trade back? I don't know. Who could possibly want to get up to that four spot? Everyone's talking about the Vikings because they have those two first-round picks. But the odds for number four overall are Marvin Harrison Jr. minus 155, J.J. McCarthy plus 240, Drake May plus 850. And then we get into the longer odds with Jaden Daniels, Malik Nabers, Rome Odunze.
Yeah, this one's tough for me because of what I just said with that third overall pick.
Yeah.
So I just have this weird feeling about J.J. McCarthy, and because of that, that makes trading up to four maybe even more desirable for a team like the Vikings.
Mm-hmm.
Because if Drake May's sitting there at four overall, any team could have him as their second best, maybe even – not maybe their first, but certainly they could easily have Drake May as their second best QB on the board. So having him at plus – what is it here? 850 to go fourth overall – do I think it's crazy? No, but if I'm the Cardinals, man, a chance to pass up on Marvin Harrison Jr. at that spot, I just don't think I could do it. So I'm going to stick with Marvin Harrison Jr. here.
Yeah, it seems like we've got this top 4 to 5 pretty solved here. The Chargers are in an interesting spot here. The Chargers are the 5th overall pick. And this one, I think, is the first one where there are some good odds in our favor here. The Chargers, the most likely picks are Malik Nabers from LSU plus 200. Then we got Marvin Harrison Jr., followed by J.J. McCarthy at 430, Joe Alt, Roma Dunze, and Drake May. The one I'll say right away is Jim Harbaugh has made it clear he wants to establish the run.
Oh, yeah.
They've made that abundantly clear. And at the 5th overall pick, they have the potential to get a guy who some think, had this not been such a quarterback-heavy draft, because those guys always get inflated value, that Joe Alt should be like number 1, 2, or 3 off the board. So for me, at plus 470 to get Joe Alt there, now you have to worry about, because it's just the pick, it doesn't matter who it goes to.
Exactly.
I just included that.
Yes.
It doesn't matter who it goes to.
Yep.
So you're making that bet.
That's why Drake May is even on the,
right,
on the board.
Right, is an option here.
Yeah.
But to me, the plus 470 Joe Alt, I think, is the best bet to make, even though it's probably not even the most likely option.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I actually totally agree with you in terms of that, but I just don't, based on, I'm just putting it in my brain of like, what have I just put in scenario wise?
Yeah.
In my scenario right now, Drake May is still on the board, and in my opinion, if I'm Jim Harbaugh and the Vikings offer me 2 first-round picks this year, I understand, you can go take Joe Alt, number 5 overall, and he can, and I think he would. I think he would take Joe Alt over any of the wide receivers, because like you said, they want to establish a run. And there's one thing we know about Jim Harbaugh. He loves the trenches.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
He likes O-line and D-line. He did it in college. He did it in the NFL. He's done it everywhere he's ever been. I think that that would be the pick if the Chargers stay there. Totally agree with you. But in my scenario, I'm taking the crazy long shot odds that the Vikings trade up here and take Drake May plus 19. I'm getting crazy odds. I know it's an insane once-in-a-lifetime shot. I just think that it's going to happen. They're going to trade up eventually, the Vikings. And at this point, this is where it's going to be for me.
Number 6 is the Giants pick. And the odds for that are Malik Nabers from LSU plus 160, Roma Dunze from Washington plus 470. We've got J.J. McCarthy, Joe Alt, Marvin Harrison Jr., and Drake May rounding out the end here. I think the only pick we really need to consider is wide receivers.
Yep.
I think we both feel pretty confident Marvin Harrison Jr. has come off the board at this point.
Yep.
So it's Nabers or Adunze. And I think after his pro day, Malik Nabers is the shoo-in pick here.
Totally agree. They absolutely, absolutely have to have a wide receiver. And I think a lot of people won't even have Nabers as their number 1 wide receiver over Marvin Harrison Jr. So, yeah, he's going to be the pick here. Totally agree.
This next one is just first offensive lineman drafted. We just mentioned Joe Alt. He is minus 250. The names behind him are Fuaga.
See how you do that on
Fashanu.
Yes.
J.C. Latham from Wisconsin. And then Amarius Mims. Now, Alt is minus 250, but I'm so confident he goes the first offensive lineman off the board that I wouldn't even think twice about minus 250 price. I think it's that easy, because the guy's just a physical specimen, and when you turn on the tape and you watch him and you go, oh wow, that's a different athlete playing left tackle there.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I'm a little bit shocked that Fashanu is the third best odds here. I thought for sure he'd be number 2. That's very interesting to me, but I agree with you. Yeah, Joe Alt feels like the safest pick, and if we know anything about offensive line, teams will always go with the safer pick.
The first defensive player drafted, we have Dallas Turner from Alabama. Quinion Mitchell, I believe, is Toledo?
Cornerback from Toledo, correct.
Jared Verse, plus 1,000. He is from Florida State. Mm-hmm. Leatu Latu, plus 1,000. That's Washington?
Yes. USC. All right, hold on.
And then Byron Murphy from Texas and Terrion Arnold to finish out that number. This one is also massively in favor of Dallas Turner, minus 200.
Yes, Washington Huskies before transferring to UCLA.
Okay, then he's UCLA.
Yes.
So this one, I think, is not as good of odds. I think there's a chance Mitchell ends up being the first defensive player picked. But Dallas Turner seems to be what everyone thinks is the consensus best defensive player.
Yeah, I love Kenyon Mitchell. Mm-hmm. I love this dude.
Little Maction?
You know me. You know I love the Mac. That is my conference. He's a beast, man. And he tested so well at the combine, showed that he's an NFL athlete. He's not just a guy who's beating up on Mac football players. I think he's going to be a stud. I'm taking the plus money with him going first as a defensive player.
I think that's fair. I just think...
And I'm like, obviously, yeah, like, this is a long shot odds, but I like long shot odds.
Yeah. I just, this one I'd probably stay away from, but I think Dallas Turner just has the pedigree, the Alabama thing.
Totally.
And edge rusher is the premium of all premium positions. First wide receiver drafted. Obviously, Marvin Harrison Jr. is the huge favorite here with Malik Nabers at plus 380, Roma Dunze plus 2600. Brian Thomas and Xavier Worthy are all plus 10,000. This one to me is simple. It's almost guaranteed Marvin Harrison Jr., but I'm placing a bet on Malik Nabers just in case.
Yeah, these are crazy odds.
Yeah.
Like, this is by far the biggest favorite we've seen for anything so far, minus 550. I don't care. I love Marvin Harrison Jr. Like, it's going to be him. He's just the safest pick. But, yeah, I agree with you that if you're going to take the odds, I would not be against
right.
you there.
A $10 bet to win 38, not a bad option.
Not a bad option.
Let's move on here to the last two we have. This one is first running back drafted, which is a very difficult one to figure out at this point because there is no Bijan Robinson. There is no Jahmyr Gibbs. There are none of those guys that are probably even going to sniff the first round. So this is Trey Benson plus 260. I believe he's Florida State. Jalen Wright plus 270, which was a name who surprised me this high from Tennessee. Jonathan Brooks from Texas, Blake Corum from Michigan, and Marshawn Lloyd from USC. Is that correct? He is plus 600. I think this is Trey Benson. He's kind of been the guy everyone's talked about. But for some reason, Jalen Wright being this high made me confused and made me want to go, maybe I should bet, because this is a guy I want the Packers to draft as their Aaron Jones replacement. But the fact he's this high is kind of raising my eyebrow going, wait, what's going on here? What did I miss about Jalen Wright? Because he's super athletic. He does a lot out of the backfield, similar to Aaron Jones. He's obviously not in college. He wasn't what we saw Aaron Jones as a pro be. But I think some people must be projecting that level of production from him for him to be the second best option.
Yeah, that is shocking to me. Mm-hmm. Totally agree with you. I mean, Trey Benson, Jonathan Brooks, Blake Corum, that all makes sense to me. Mm-hmm. Jalen Wright being right there is shocking, and it is fishy.
Yes.
And I'm with you. That seems like, all right, if he's up there, he's up there for a reason.
Uh-huh.
And, yeah, I don't know if I have the guts to part with my money on it.
Right.
But that screams they know something.
Yes, that is where I stand on as well. I think Trey Benson does end up going first. You still get plus money on him. He just feels more of that less of a gadgety type player, more bell cow, can handle more of the load. And the last one is about the Green Bay Packers. This one's simple. Position the Green Bay Packers of the Green Bay Packers' first drafted player. First is offensive lineman at 115, cornerback at plus 175, safety at plus 550, D-line edge plus 550, linebacker plus 2,900, and of course they got to throw it in there, a wide receiver at plus 3,400. This seems easy to me. I've been on this train for a long time. I would cross cornerback off the list. Now, I wouldn't be super shocked. I would just be surprised if the Packers ended up drafting a cornerback in the first round. They paid Keyshawn Nixon to be an elite slot corner. Is he that or not? You can make that decision. This week, Matt LaFleur spoke about the new defensive coordinator and secondary coach being very confident in Keyshawn Nixon and really wanting him back. So to me, cornerback's off this list. The interesting thing is after offensive line, which I think the Packers end up going, is safety, D-line, edge, or linebacker. To me, D-line or edge being at plus 550, I probably sprinkle it. I probably don't bet on offensive line just because of the small odds and just think, I've watched Goody draft for a long time. I've watched Ted Thompson draft for a long time. They love D-linemen and edge guys. They view them as a premium position. Also, offensive line is that. But at plus 550, if for whatever reason a guy falls that the Packers absolutely love, I think they draft that defensive lineman and go, we'll find offensive linemen throughout the rest of this draft.
I find it interesting that you've already crossed off corner off your list.
and I don't disagree with you, but I just look back. The last time, other than Jordan Love, that the Packers took an offensive player with their first pick was 2011 mm-hmm. when they took Derek Sherrod 32nd overall
yep.
as an offensive tackle. I don't think that they will draft another defensive lineman. I do think that they will draft a cornerback because, number one, it's an extremely good and extremely deep cornerback class, specifically at the top end. Like, the first four or five guys are all really, really good. You might not get one of those guys in your second round. So there's going to be one of those guys available for you in the first round. I just think it fits. I just think the positional need, the new defensive coach who is a defensive backs coach, yes, he has confidence in Keyshawn Nixon. Hey, guess what? There's a new kickoff rule. And if you don't think that they value Keyshawn Nixon as much as a kick returner as they do as a defensive player, I think that's a big deal. And I think that could explain why he got the contract he got. I don't know if they're just said, okay, yeah, we're sold. We're sold at corner. We got Jair. We got Stokes. We got all these guys. I don't buy it. I think they're going to take a cornerback with their first pick.
Well, let's put a lunch bet on that.
Let's do it.
I get offensive line. You get cornerback. Now, there is one interesting thing here.
Yeah.
Cooper DeJean is well within the Packers' possible option here.
Yes.
But I think they might draft him and call him a safety. Okay. So where do we stand on that? So if... say they run the pick up there because Cooper DeJean fits what the Packers love.
Yes.
He's a secondary player. They value secondary players. He's extremely athletic, like one of the athletic freaks out there. He even does punt return.
Yes.
And he can play all the positions on the defense. So if they draft Cooper DeJean and call him a safety, I win. If they call him a corner, you win.
Well, no, because it's safety, none of us win because you got offensive linemen.
True. Fact. I meant I win.
It's a push.
I meant, right. Yes.
It wasn't a cornerback.
Yes. Okay.
You're right.
I didn't mean like I win that bet.
I know. I understand what you're saying. I got you. You're right. You're right. It wasn't a corner. But what if he like is a safety, but he plays like, you know, 25% of his, you know, in the nickel or the slot or like he's moving around?
What's so
if he plays 50% or more of his snaps
at a cornerback position?
At some version of a cornerback position.
Because I'll allow you outside or nickel in that case.
Yeah.
50%.
50% or more.
Then you would win. So we're going to have to watch this bet play out over the course of the season.
This is going to be
a season long bet. For a guy who might not even end up on the team.
That's the bet. That's the bet. If it's Cooper DeJean, any other cornerback, and I win.
Yep.
Any offensive lineman, you win. And I'm with it all the way.
Perfect. I love that bet.
Great.
I hope we don't have to do it all season long and wait to see how much Cooper DeJean and then.
I think if you should buy it, we need like maybe not 50%. How about like 35%?
I'll give you 35.
Okay.
Because I think if they end up drafting him, they want him to kind of play all the positions.
Yeah.
They view him as a. But I do think they would want him at a safety. They have a glaring hole at safety.
Yes.
They don't have a second safety at this point.
Yes.
There's no one on the team right now that they want playing that other safety. So I think that's what they would draft him as. Now, what does that end up being? Because Xavier McKinney can do both of those as well.
Yes.
That's lined up in the nickel corner in the slot too.
So, let's look at Xavier McKinney. We'll look at snaps. And if it's like equal to that, we'll call him a safety and you're right.
All right. That'll do it for this week's edition of the Starter Pack. We'll be back next week. We'll go over some of the Packers' possible options and everything latest in Green Bay. You're listening? You listened. This was the Starter Pack.